You're listening to Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks and co-host Angelia Savage. We seek to help you relate well so you can live well in all aspects of your life.
Welcome to the show that will change your life for the rest of your life. This is Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks, and I'm your co-host, Angelia Savage, for the day. And this is a show that's going to help you connect and communicate better with one another, everybody around you. Because when we learn to communicate with one another, we stand in our power, and we ultimately become a better spouse, a better parent, better employees or employers, and basically we just become better human beings, the one that God intended us to be all along. And this is why Relate Well was created by Dr. Rick Marks. He has a true passion to continually help others become the best version of themselves when relating to each other. Also known as Dr. Rick, welcome to the show. How are you doing this evening?
I am doing wonderful, and it's always great to be in the studio with you.
Always. Likewise. It's nice to be here with you.
Of course, we got Colby over there, right?
We love Colby. We bring her in as much as we can. And
very much so.
We'll bring her in today on something, because we've got a lot of good content today.
Yeah, we'll see how patient she really is.
That is what we're going to be talking about. We're going to tackle patience and kindness later in the show.
Yes.
But right now, I want to dive into a few listener questions.
Okay.
You know, that's my favorite part of the show.
Right.
And it's actually a lot of our listeners' favorite part, too, because that's their opportunity to send in good questions and get answers and kind of a personal therapy, you know, and maybe from an advantage point of yours, which is nice.
Yeah, and I shoot from the hip on these. So
you do.
I never know what's coming.
Yes, that is true.
So fire away when you're ready, my
All
friend.
Right. Okay, well, so let's start with Amy, which is in Los Angeles, California.
Okay.
So I'm sure she's having a beautiful sunshiny day in California right now. So it's a little earlier in the mm-hmm. day for her. But she says, all the women gossip in our group of friends, it seems like. So how do I stay out of the gossip with my friends, but still be a cool girl to hang out with? It's so hard because everyone is always talking about someone's marriage, someone's boyfriend, someone's family member, etc. Please help me stay out, but still be cool.
Okay, so in the question is an assumption. So there's what's called metacommunication. So when people usually ask questions, there's always an assumption embedded in the question. So here's the assumption that I'm hearing, that if I don't engage, then I'm not cool. You hear it? That's the meta message.
That's what I was getting from
it. All right.
Yeah.
So let's address the meta message first. All right.
Okay.
The meta message, if I don't engage, I'm not cool and I'm not going to be accepted. That's actually not true. So let's think about it this way. She's cool just because she's her, right? Amy, you're just Amy. You're cool because you are. Just think about it this way. The fact that they're gossiping would indicate on some level that they're not really cool, that there's something wrong, and you want to stay cool. You stay cool by not engaging. So you're thinking about it this way. She's thinking, well, if I don't engage, then they're not going to like me. They'll think something's wrong with me. The reality is you don't have to engage. It's called boundaries. You can set up, you know, I don't do that for my life. But if they go, well, Amy, what do you think? If I were in her shoes, I would probably say something like this. You know, I really don't have an opinion, but thanks for asking.
Just shut that down right there.
I would just go right there,
uh-huh.
You know, and I'd be my standard phrase or things around that. And they can do what they want to do, but I don't have to engage it, right? Because
mm-hmm.
I don't want to go there. I want to be mature enough to not go there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say to her, you're cool no matter what. Not engaging doesn't make you not cool. Actually, what makes you cool is not gossiping. Can we also know from the scripture that gossip is it's a sin. It's a problem.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
So all she has to do is just say something like, you know, I don't really have an opinion, but thanks for asking.
That's so hard not to be drug into that. I mean, I am with women all the time for golfing events and, you know, tennis girls and,
mm-hmm.
you know, for different reasons, Bible studies. And I mean, it's really difficult to stay out of it. So I'm kind of with her. I try to stay out of the gossip.
Let's explore that a little bit for you and her. So what is what's the draw? What's the draw to want to engage? What's the draw to want to engage?
I think in my mind, not hers, I'm not speaking for Amy, but in my mind, I think likes.
Acceptance.
Right?
I want to be accepted.
Right. Acceptance.
I want to
exactly.
be a part of the group.
Mm-hmm.
And think about it. Sometimes we make really bad decisions to feel like we have to fit in you see, and you don't really have to engage in stuff that you don't agree with just to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you're there and they're friends of yours makes you fit in. Don't give in to that little voice in your head that says, well, I need to do this to be a part of the group. We're actually, you're already a part of the group.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and so would it be different for men? Are men the same? Because I feel like men are a little gossipy, too.
I think everybody gossips.
They can be a little gossipy.
Yeah,
they love those little, you know, tidbits of information from their wives. And I feel like everybody...
everybody gossips. It's not one gender, right?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the Bible didn't say, okay, women, don't gossip. Don't gossip, because everybody does it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the real value in staying true to who you want to be in that level of maturity, it would also over time send them a signal. Someone goes, you know, I noticed that Angelia never really engages. I respect that in her.
And that's funny. I think that's why a lot of people actually confide in me. And I'm the great listener, because I don't repeat things mm-hmm. that are said to me, and I don't bring that up. So I think people maybe recognize that in me. So they feel, I don't know, maybe I'm a little bit more trustworthy because I don't engage in the gossip. I really try not to.
And that says something about how they see you in your character. Because mm-hmm. if you know someone gossips a lot, you know not to tell that person, because you know if they do it in front of you, they're going to do it for somebody else.
So true. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'm sure Amy appreciates that tidbit of information. And
well, I hope it was helpful.
Try and stay out of the mix, Amy. Be your own person. And that's always, mm-hmm. you know, really great, too.
People be true to yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, so the next one is from Shannon in Corpus Christi. Well, that sounds pretty today. And she says, my boyfriend of 6 months told me in the beginning of our relationship he would be moving to a different state for work. But I still continued to see him in hopes that he would propose and he would ask me to move in with him. But this past weekend, he said his aunt and his mom want to spend time with him before he left for, you know, moving to another state.
Mm-hmm.
I know in my gut that this was weird. And so I tracked him on our locations app, which proved me right. So I just don't know. Should I end things or should I be direct and call him out for lying to me? I mean, he hasn't proposed and he is leaving soon. So where do you think I should take this relationship?
Wow. My first gut reaction is end it. It isn't worth it. He's going to lie to you while he's dating you and deceive you. That already tells you who he is. He's not honest with you. The fact that he's leaving and going to another state, you have to answer the question, do you really want a long-distance relationship? Is that what you really want to settle in for, right?
It sounds like she wanted him to propose and,
well, yeah,
and move
and,
in together.
And to me, that's a problem, because 6 months and you want to propose, that's rather quick. You know, I always go back to Dr. John Van Eff's book. We've talked about it here before on the show in the past. On, you know, how to avoid marrying a jerk or a jerkette.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the principles of how, what it takes to bond. You never trust a person more than you know them. You know, the what he called the relationship attachment model.
And how long does it take to know them again?
Dr. Jim Talley's book would indicate it's 800 hours spread out over 11 months to really form a deep, intimate relationship with someone. You don't form a deep intimate relationship in just a few months. It doesn't happen.
Okay.
That's all the neurochemicals in the brain making you feel something. But we talked about before, just because I feel love, a lot of people feel love, but they lose their mind. So, you know, as I think it was John says, you fell in love and lost your mind.
Yeah, that's so true.
It's almost like that pattern's emerging for Shannon here.
Yep.
And I would tell Shannon she needs to step back and think about the relationship and think about what's going on. Think about what she does know and then make a decision. Is this really what I want to engage in long term with someone who's willing to lie and deceive me now? If he's willing to do it now, he'll do it if you marry him.
And so she doesn't call him out on it. Like, she's asking, should she actually have a conversation and say, I know you lied to me, or I think you lied to me. It sounds like she knows. So
yeah.
You don't
and
actually
didn't go,
have
and
a conversation
it sounds like he
over?
Didn't go to mom. So it means he went somewhere else, right? And she didn't say where.
She didn't say where. So,
so
I'm not quite sure.
If she wants the relationship, she'll need to confront him. She'll need to confront him.
So say something, mm-hmm. communicate feelings.
Yeah. Hey, I noticed
then...
you said this, and whether you like it or not, I tracked you. I noticed you went here. Now I know you lied to me. Help me understand that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't really want to be with me, just be man enough and say it. I don't want to be with you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But I don't want to be led along thinking one thing when it's really going to be something else.
So if he continues to lie and says, no, I went to my aunt's, then she just needs to end it?
Yeah.
Okay.
She knows for a fact where he was.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go, Shannon. Okay. All the luck to you. And let's move on to Stacy, which is from Asheville, North Carolina. Stacy says, my marriage is coming to an end because we can't seem to repair the damage of him cheating. Mm. And then I cheated for revenge. Mm. I have forgiven him, but he can't forgive me. Could you get us through this, or do you have any advice? And do men have a harder time forgiving after cheating? Because it seems like when a wife cheats, it's over. But when a man cheats, the woman stays.
Wow.
Interesting.
That's interesting.
Stacy from Asheville.
Well, that one doesn't have me stumped. It has me just kind of pondering. So I'll answer the first part of it. Yes, we could help. But in my world, we're going to put you in our 3-day intensive. And for 3 full days, we're going to get you unstuck, reconnected, and we're going to teach you what to do. And we're going to deal with all the emotions that are hanging out in the lower order brain, the emotional brain, mm-hmm. that's not being dealt with. We're going to show you how to do those. All right, get those things done. We also talk about trust in those and how trust rebuilt. We also talk about forgiveness in the intensive. So the intensives are designed to take couples just like Stacy and her husband and get them unstuck and moving. All right. Now, yes, he cheated, and hers was revenge. So in his mind, I did this way, but you did this to get me back. That's probably, I want to assume that's where his brain's thinking.
Okay.
You know, I didn't do this to get at you. I did this because I was stupid or dumb or I was in love with you or whoever. But you did this to get me back. And that's maybe where his brain is stuck, you know.
Ah, okay.
You intentionally did this as a way to get me back. You could have got me back different ways. Because my brain is also thinking, and of course I'm having to make assumptions, he stopped doing it. But they weren't reconnecting. Things weren't getting better. And so he had stopped. But because things weren't getting better post-adultery, she then acted out to get back at him, which means she's not resolved her anger, which in his mind, I stopped. I'm working on this thing. And you went and did that? And that's my assumption of where his brain is. Now, it doesn't take away what he did or what she does. They're both wrong, you see? But I have to step back into, based on what I'm hearing, each person's shoes and go, well, if I was here and I've finished and I'm working on it and making things better and trying to make things right, but you still didn't feel like we were getting along and then you went and did that, in his brain, that's more egregious than what I did.
Mm, okay.
You see?
So it's completely different in his eyes, but it's not a male-female. It's the reason behind it.
It's always the motive.
Okay, but you can help.
Both of them.
And
have done it many, many, many times with couples. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Even people who've had years of therapy, nothing working in divorce court, our marriage intensives are actually designed to get people out of divorce court, stabilize the relationship. I say this way, I'm going to give you a concrete slab to build your future on.
Absolutely.
You see, to make tomorrow a different way.
All right. Well, that's a good foundation to start with. Mm-hmm. And we will be back in a moment. You're listening to Relate Well with Dr. Rick.
Healthy, loving relationships are essential for a happy life. On Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks and co-host Angelia Savage, you'll learn the principles for healthy, mature relationships. They share personal journeys, biblical and clinical insights that will challenge and inspire you to create fulfilling relationships in every aspect of life. Sundays at 5 p.m. on 97.1 The Truth and ilovethetruth.com. When we relate well, we will live well. And to live well, we must relate well.
Welcome back to Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks. And I'm Angelia Savage, your co-host. And are you thinking you're maybe a patient person or not a patient person? Are you stressing about the person in front of you right now because they drive too slow or they aren't helping you quick enough right now in line because you're listening to us on a podcast perhaps? Well, you're not alone. We've all been there. But come to find out, patience is a virtue that actually most of us don't have, but there are many reasons that we should have it. And some of them are pretty surprising. So, Dr. Mm-hmm. Rick, I want to pick your brain today. And there were some really interesting articles that came out about patience and how patience is so important to have patience and the reasons why that we should have that.
Yes.
So let's tackle that and go into why we really should have patience.
Well, for me, Many years ago, in my own journey of transforming my life, you know, it was in the 1990s. I was a professor at a Christian graduate school in Virginia, and I'll be honest, I was just tired of being a Christian. It was just too much work. I was one of those denominational systems. It's all performance based, and no real grace. So you have to keep performing. And one day there on the campus, I'm kind of just feeling blah about my life and things. And the Spirit of the Lord told me, Rick, you know my word, but you really don't know my heart. And I said, then I want to know your heart. And he said, you don't get my heart. You develop my heart. Uh-huh. And then I began to realize, since God is love, his heart is love. So since 1994, he has had me developing myself into a person who's mature in love. Not perfect in love, but mature in love. Well, then what is love? 1 Corinthians 13. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love, it doesn't act unseemly. It's not rude to another person, right? It doesn't rejoice. There's 15 traits of love listed there. It bears all things. It endures all things. But then I had a mentor help me realize something. Of those 15 traits of love, 13 are variations of two. Patience and kindness, the first two mentioned. And I said, if you begin to focus yourself on living a life of patience and kindness in all its forms, you'll develop Father's heart, because he is love. And since love is patient, God is patient. Since God is loving, love is kind, God is kind, right? He's all of those. So I began to develop patience. Now, here's the best place I've found to do it. Walmart. Yeah, I know. That's funny.
What?
Yep.
Walmart of all places.
Yeah. You know, 20 checkout
helps
lines.
Helps you develop kindness.
No, patience.
Oh, patience. Okay, yeah. Please do tell. Share.
20 checkout lines, only one is open.
Isn't that the truth? And it's probably the self-checkout.
And one morning, many years ago, I was there early morning, one is open, and there's a little lady in front of me. I'm being completely open here. She's probably in her 80s. I'm probably in my early 40s at the time. And she's writing a check really, really slow. And I'm, you know, I stopped in to get some antihistamines. My allergies were acting up. And I had to be at the church to start the day two of a marriage retreat. And I'm standing there huffing and puffing, impatient.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The lady behind the cash register lady, she looks at me and like rolls her eyes like, I'm sorry. Because she could tell that I was what? Impatient.
Impatient.
The little lady's just doing what she does. And the Spirit of the Lord says to me, you know, the reason you're here right now is because you said you wanted my heart. And now you get to practice being patient.
Oh, he tested you. He put you to the test with your patience.
I began to realize, Angelia, God gives us opportunities every day to practice his heart, patience and kindness. So I took a deep breath, because now I'm in humility, right? Mm-hmm. One of my big four words to live by. I took a deep breath. And I call it now practicing patience.
As much as you could with your allergies acting up.
Exactly. Yeah, good point.
Angry and trying to breathe.
So here's what I did. I actually looked at the cash register. I said, well, when do you get off work? How's your day been? And I started to talk to her.
Okay.
And as I focused on talking to her, I quit focusing on the little lady in front of me. And I became patient. And here's the thing I've also realized in my journey. People know when you're impatient because they can feel it.
It's an energy that's around people.
Exactly.
It stresses me when someone's impatient beside me.
Patience creates a positive energy. Impatience creates a negative energy.
Negativity.
And to the degree that I'm impatient, I'm not loving. To the degree that I am patient, I am loving. And Father gave me opportunities all the time to practice patience with my kids when they are growing up, right?
Well, that's practice on the hour, pretty much, with kids.
Exactly. With my wife, with other people, right?
Right.
And so I realized that my motive in life is to become a patient and kind person to the best of my ability, not perfectly, but maturely. Mm-hmm. And so when I began to look at the research around patience, it was like, wait a minute. This isn't just something the Bible says to. Scientific research shows it's a powerful way to live life as well, you see.
Well, let's dig into that, because there was an article that was written by Mayo Clinic not too long ago, and that is what it was talking about. It was saying that there's benefits to being kind to others. There's benefits to yourself.
Yes. The work around patience has to do with the more patient you become, the more you increase serotonin. Serotonin in the brain is a neurochemical that creates pleasure. the more impatient you become, and over time, you'll start to decrease serotonin. Of course, you know that serotonin depletion long-term leads to a clinical depression, so you get medicine that increases serotonin so you're not depressed. So
patients, let me get this straight. So I've got a lady in front of me. She's stressing me out. She's taking her time. Who knows what she's doing, but she's taking her time. I'm in a rush. I am trying to get out of the store, and because I am practicing patience with her, and I'm finding serenity, I guess, within myself.
Yes, you will.
I'm increasing a feel-good hormone.
Yes, you are.
Really?
Isn't that powerful? Even rat studies have shown this to be true. So there's
rats are patient.
Rats can be patient. Yeah,
I watched. How's that happen?
You know, I watched a video on Facebook just yesterday, and it was a man, a police officer, and his dog. Right, mm-hmm. And the relationship between his canine and him, and he has the dog sitting in the garage, and he puts a treat in front of the dog. And, of course, the camera's on the dog. And he tells the dog, now, don't touch it. Don't touch it. Leave it alone. And the officer walks away and closes the door. And for almost 45 seconds, that dog just looked at the treat and looked up, didn't move, and waited. And when the officer came back in, he said, okay, and it ate the treat. And I thought, wouldn't that be interesting if I could have that kind of patience? That's about trusting other people, right? And being confident that that person is going to be there for you. And he practiced patience. We also know through studies of children many, many years ago, where you would give children an option to have, one piece of candy now or 10 later.
That's a tough one.
Patience, right?
That's a tough one.
Self-control.
That's a toss-up.
Because part of patience requires what? Self-control.
Yeah.
Kindness requires self-control. All the traits of love require self-control, you see. And so when you look at the neuroscience around patience, I mean, what the Bible teaches is a trait of love has far more benefits around it, you know? So I kind of put some notes together here. So what are some reasons for cultivating patience? One of the things I think is that patient people enjoy better mental health. You just kind of alluded to it. Mm-hmm. You're actually more peaceful.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
You can actually find peace in being patient.
Yeah, which means I don't have to control something. I'm not going to try and control something I can't control. I can't control what's going on the line at Walmart. So I can let that something that I have no power over affect me. It make me impatient. Like, wait a minute. Why would I want to live this way?
So is that really where it stems from, is control? I want to control my environment, control my time, control somebody else's time?
I think that's a piece of it, very much so.
Yeah, if you let go of that control.
Yeah, just let go of it. All right, I'm here. It's, 11 o'clock at night. Everybody's shopping, and I thought they wouldn't be, but heck, only one open. Well, I can start to talk to people next to me now.
That is what we do. We try to control. God's mm-hmm. got control.
Exactly.
We need
right.
to let go of control because God's got it.
Yes. One of the other things that reasons to cultivate it, people who are patient actually have healthier friends. I mean, you've been around impatient people regularly. You don't want to be around them.
You don't want to be around them.
Be around them. They just frustrate you, right? Yeah. They just frustrate you. Can you imagine being
and they make you impatient.
Very much so.
Actually jump on board. Yeah. Oh my gosh, you're right. She is. What's going on? Why are they taking so much time?
They create
you
a negative
jump on board
energy.
With them, and then you're in the negative space.
And here's the other thing: is patience helps us achieve our goals.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that I want to achieve with Relate Well and other things, but patience is the way to get there. If I try and make things happen too quickly, I'm going to make mistakes. So patience helps you achieve your goals. We know it's linked to good physical health. And here's the thing is, patience helps create healthy, loving relationships. Impatience will not.
Yeah, you do need to be patient with a partner.
Yes, you do.
You do.
Yes, you do.
Your children, your partner, your spouse, your employer. It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, something that would help you be a more rounded individual
mm-hmm.
and calm.
Yeah. So I guess one thing, we wrap up our segment here. What are some benefits then of becoming a patient person, right?
Okay.
One, it helps you focus on longer-term outcomes and goals rather than short-term pleasure. The studies with the kids years ago, do you want one piece of candy now or do you want 10 in 5 minutes? And the one
depends
piece of candy.
On the day, how
and the one
I
piece
am.
Of candy standing right here, you don't see the 10. They just told you can have 10 in 5 minutes, but you got to wait,
Right.
And many kids just ate the one, you see? All right. Patience helps you make good choices rather than impulsive decisions. All right. And here's another thing. Being patient allows you to move to compassion It allows you to move to empathy, which is one of our core words of living really well. It allows you to move to kindness, you see. Patience will rob you of the ability to be kind. And kindness, being unkind, robs you of the ability to be patient. They kind of play off each other, right? And think about it this way. When you're around a patient person, it builds your reputation for being a persistent person. People know, well, you know, he's patient. He'll hang in there. Mm-hmm. He won't give up. He doesn't quit, you know? Mm-hmm. Rick is that kind of a guy, or that person is that kind of a guy. That's, you know, that kind of thing. And let's be honest, if you want to develop a skill, you're going to have to practice what?
Practice
patience.
It. Yeah. And that's what I was thinking. I'm like, can you develop patience?
Yes, you can. I've been doing it all these years. Go to Walmart and do it. It's a place to practice it, right?
Okay.
Go to different places where you know you tend to get impatient. Go there. Take a deep breath. Quit trying to control something. Practice patience. That's my term for it.
Right, I like that.
Here's a chance for you to practice patience. Make a choice. How do you want to be right now? And the more I practice patience, the more I became patient.
And the happier you are.
It is, because I actually live more in peace. I live more in the present now.
Yeah. Okay.
And patience robs me of what is. It's like you're stopping me from being here. Mm-hmm. Or you're stopping me from accomplishing that, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, what, an extra 2 seconds? An extra 5 seconds or 10 seconds? Yes. Because you're getting in my way.
Yeah.
Impatience is all about ourselves. Patience is about others.
We need more than 10 seconds right now in this segment. Oh, my gosh. We've got to wrap things up. But we're going to come back, and we're going to have to transition a little bit, unfortunately. So we got to leave the kindness aspect, and we've got to move on, because we want to continue talking about something that we left off last week, and a lot of people wanted to get here. To hear the continuation of abusive relationships. And so we'll be back in a moment to talk about that. So stay tuned. You're listening to Dr. Rick.
To have and to hold from this day forward. Your wedding day was the biggest commitment of your life. Relationships change over time. Needs go unmet. Communication breaks down. And half of all marriages end in divorce. If till death do us part has become a challenge, then it's time to reconcile and reconnect. In his 1 to 3 day marriage intensives, Dr. Rick Marks coaches couples in distress back to their love and hope for a future together. Dr. Rick's intensives is not traditional therapy. Marriage intensives give couples the skills for communication, problem solving, emotional regulation, as well as the skills for healthy bonding and much more. Intensives empower couples to create the marriage they desire with Dr. Rick's Relate Well principles and tools, keeping couples out of the divorce graveyard.
I realized many years ago with the team that I work with that if we could teach people those skills for bonding and reattachment and communication and problem solving and emotional regulation and much more, it gives you the hope again, which can lead to the goodness and the love and the feelings and the intimacy so that you win. Your usness, your marriage wins, and your kids win.
87% of the couples who participated in Dr. Rick's marriage intensives reconnected their love for each other and remained married.
If you want to take the opportunity, you have the will to do it, you want to do it, and you want to save it, we'll show you how.
Intensives are cheaper than a divorce and much more meaningful. Save your marriage, reconnect your love, save a generation, and secure your future. For more information, visit drrickmarks.com or call 904-724-8683.
Welcome back to Relate Well with Dr. Rick. I'm Angelia Savage, your co-host, and we are going to, I think, transition into a really good, informative part of the show. We had a great conversation last week, Dr. Rick, talking about abusive relationships and identifying those. And so I want to continue that conversation because we had so much feedback on it. And I think everybody wants to really just unfold a little bit more of that onion, you know, peel it back mm-hmm. a little bit more. Because it does go really deep with so many people, whether it's, domestic abuse, whether it's emotional abuse, whether it's toxic relationships, whether it's narcissistic relationships. Everybody, I think, has some sort of story a lot of people do. I'll say maybe not everyone and hopefully not everyone, but a lot of people do. And we had a lot of feedback. So let's talk about that again.
Okay.
And so let's just quickly define that relationship, you know, an abusive relationship. Just give us a quick definition, and then I'm going to ask a few questions.
Okay, so in general, you're in an abusive relationship when someone treats you in a way that demeans you, tears you down, makes you feel like you're crazy, emotionally makes you confused, makes you feel unlovable, makes you feel like you have no value and worth. Of course, we know that the other forms are physical violence. Those are pretty easy. But emotional abuse is a lot more subtle, right? It's all about messing with a person's mind emotionally, where they have no sense of reality test anymore. What's real and what's real? Am I lovable or am I not lovable? Is this really about you, or did I make you do what you did? You see? And emotional abuse makes you feel crazy.
Oh.
And it's the person making you feel crazy. You're being emotionally abused.
So that's why society has that. And it seems like in every aspect, you're crazy, you're crazy, you're crazy. And, you know, women are like, no, you make me crazy.
Yes.
And probably vice versa, too. I'm sure there's on the other side.
And the other thing is, if you already went into a relationship with a low self-esteem, low sense of self-worth, you know, low self-confidence, and you're in that kind of relationship, you don't have the emotional strength to think it through, right? Because you're trying to feel the relationship rather than think the relationship. You've got to think the relationship. You've got to step back, in a sense, and look at the relationship objectively and go, wait a minute. I said, no, I know he did that. I know he did, but he said this. But no, I know he said that. But I keep feeling this because he said that. But I know he did. I go, then trust your gut. Trust your gut. There is what's called gut thinking. And sometimes your head overrides your gut. And you should have listened to your what?
Your gut, for sure. It's always right and never going to lead you astray.
I think that's that instinctual part that God puts in us to let you go, I know you keep thinking because you want this to be this way, but your gut is telling you something. You might want to listen to it.
Yeah, always, I think. Well, yeah. I think for our society today, I think there's such a stigma around this. I think, like you were saying, the physical abuse is external.
Right.
And if you just look up abuse just on TikTok or any sort of social media, any YouTube or anything, that's what you see. You see physical abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see emotional abuse. It is only usually behind closed doors, and it's only two people that know about it, possibly the children or somebody else that lives in your household. But that's why it's really, really difficult, I think, to understand, to share with other people, because you think that it's maybe you. It's not the other person.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you shut down if you're exposed to this emotional abuse.
You do. And interesting, you talk to people who've been physically abused and emotionally abused. They'll tell you, I'd rather you hit me because at least I know it's over.
Ooh.
For a while.
Oh, that
but
gives
the
me
emotional
chills.
Oh, my goodness. The emotional abuse is continual. It's ongoing. It never ends. And there's not a scar or a bruise I can see.
Right.
I can't see it. And at least when you hit me, it's over. You know, whatever's in you is calmed down for a while. You know, and there's a reprieve. But emotionally, there is no reprieve. It's continual. It's ongoing. And the damage is in one's soul. And that's what's so insidious about it. You actually see it among church leaders. I mean, I've worked for church leaders who were very emotionally and spiritually abusive. They would use abusive tactics in a spiritual way, you see. And so there's a lot of talk right now in evangelical circles among activists to point out abusive relationships. Wade Mullen, who is a minister, in his doctoral thesis was studying emotionally abusive leaders and organizations, particularly in churches. And he wrote a book called Something's Not Right. It just came out the middle of last year. Read it right away. Excellent book. And it's almost written for the abused. Here's what happened to you. Here's why they do what they do. And here's how you need to heal. You see? But what he's really doing is he's calling out the church to identify emotionally and spiritually abusive leaders and what they do and how they do it. From a pastoral perspective, from that role as a minister, you see. And so I think you hear the term gaslighting now. So you're seeing a lot of this come up in the current culture, this term gaslighting. You know, you're throwing gas on something. What does all that mean? It's all linked to emotional abuse.
Well, let's talk about what gaslighting is, because okay. I think that's important for people that maybe haven't heard that in today's society. And a lot of people do throw that around in today's society. So let's go into exactly what gaslighting is.
Okay. So I'm going to read a passage by Sherry Gordon in her article on what is gaslighting. She says here that gaslighting is a form of manipulation that occurs in abusive relationships. It is an insidious, which I agree, and sometimes covert, you referred to that, is usually done in hidden, type of emotional abuse where the bully or abuser makes the target question their judgments and reality.
And do they know what they're doing? Are they doing this purposely?
They know exactly what
they're
doing.
What they're doing.
It is. That's why it's insidious. They know exactly what they're doing. You see, because what gaslighting does, it's there are techniques that a person uses to undermine your sense of reality. It always keeps you off-centered from knowing what is true and what's not true. You never really know what's true, even true what's true about yourself, you see. And that's the thing is when they're doing that, you're going to end up as the one who's being gaslighted. You're always going to end up second-guessing yourself, not trusting yourself. You're going to think, well, maybe I am the crazy one here. Maybe that person is the right. Maybe I am the wrong one. And you lose a sense of self. You lose a sense of identity. But when you lose that and you don't have it because you've been gaslighted, where do you get your identity from? The gaslighter.
That person. I've been there. I can speak on that.
Really?
Probably almost to extremes.
And
yeah,
what would you say the effects
and
were on you?
I didn't know that I was in it at the time. Because I did feel a little off-center. And I think that the book that you were just talking about saying, something's just not right. And that's
a great title.
That is how I felt. Something just isn't right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that person would gaslight the situation and throw something. I mean, I would just say he would throw a bomb out. He would throw a bomb out and then just watch it explode.
And they love watching you react to the explosion. Because
That's
they're
exactly
not to blame.
How I felt.
Yeah, they're not to blame. It's all you.
That's exactly how I felt. I felt like he just threw a bomb in the room and just watched it explode. And then I always described it. I felt like I was a dog chasing my tail in a circle.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt like I was going around and round and round in the room, you know, just chasing my tail and trying to get to the bottom of the issue. And whatever issue he threw out, whatever it was, I would try to get to the bottom of it and discuss it and talk about it. And he would just keep on and keep on and keep on to where it made you feel like you were crazy. You started second guessing and going, well, did it happen that way? No, it didn't happen that way because I have an excellent memory. I have an excellent memory and I can remember every word, everything everyone was wearing, the environment, the smells, I remember everything. And so it's my perception though.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought maybe it's my perception, his perception. So maybe I am the crazy
now
one.
Now you're second guessing yourself.
So that's exactly what happened. So I fell into the second guess and maybe he's right, maybe I'm wrong. And then internally I was fighting with myself. Because I was going, no, I'm right here. I know I'm right. I know it happened this way. And so then I feel like I've lost all control, all perception. I mean, and I did feel like the crazy one. And it didn't bother him in the least.
And it never does. Because they actually get joy. The gaslight gets
exactly
joy
what I felt.
Out of watching the person who's being victimized by the abuse
lose their mind.
Lose their mind.
Lose their mind.
Control. Because what it does, it gives the abuser power and control over you.
And that's
really
exactly
what abuse is about. Abuse is no more than about power and control over another person. Now, you can go and look at all their psychological reasons for why they do what they do. But in the end, in that moment, it's still about you want power and control and you disrespecting people and having no goodwill towards them. That's why I live by my four words, goodwill, respect, humility, and empathy, because those four words protect relationships. Because if I become a person of goodwill, respect, humility, and empathy, I won't abuse you. Well, you shared something that reminded me of this morning. I'm going to confess it. Something happened on our honeymoon, and Luella said something, and I've been harboring hurt for a week and a half now, right? And she's been noticing I've been kind of off. And this morning, I was sitting there thinking about it this morning. And, of course, I was gone on a trip, you know, working trip. And she came back yesterday from being off doing some things. And I thought, all right, am I being manipulative right now by not saying? I was questioning myself. And she said, are you okay? I said, no, I'm not. And I said, don't take what I'm about to say personal. It's my issue. It's not yours. And I told her what happened and what she said. She goes, well, I didn't mean it that way. I said, I don't know if you did or not, but I just realized if I keep hanging on to this, I could become manipulative with it because I'm shutting you out of my hurt. And I realized that the only way I can heal from this is to tell you. And she came up, gave me a hug and kiss, and it was resolved.
Aww.
Oh, but I realized I was hanging on to it, and I knew in my mind, but I was afraid if I told her, she'd think I'm kind of wimpy or, you know, you're 59 years old, you know, be a man. That was all that stuff in my head. I call that the little it voice. Mm-hmm. Maybe she said to me, tell it to shut up, you know.
Tell it to hush.
Yeah, tell the it voice to be quiet, you know. So I just, even this morning, you know, I had to get that out of my head. But what motivated me was, all right, I'm not being manipulative. I'm just being afraid. Mm-hmm. I'm just afraid.
Is that where most of this comes from, is fear?
For the power and control part, no, because they want the power and control.
Okay.
For me, what I was doing was more motivated by fear, but I had to question myself. Am I being manipulative? Mm-hmm. Am I saying something? No, I'm afraid. I had to reason it through. Why am I not saying something? Because I was afraid of rejection. Mm-hmm. You know. And then she goes, if I rejected you, no, you're still with me. But you know, those old tapes we play in our head, you know, things like that. And so, you know, I'm glad I live by what I teach. It just took me a little while to get there on this one, you know, but I'm glad I did. And, you know, us is back, if you will.
Yes.
You know, us is back. And I try to live that way the best of my ability.
Yeah. And so, sometimes it has to go away to come back. And you have to be real with yourself and your partner to be able to say how you feel and, you know, communicate.
And that's
so important.
And that's the power of staying out of abusive relationships, being mm-hmm. honest, having integrity with yourself and others, and humility to say, you know what, this happened, this is what my brain's thinking, and get out of that space.
Yep. All right, well, we're going to get out right now.
Okay.
We're going to come back in a moment. You are listening to Dr. Rick. We'll be back in a moment.
A healthy, nurtured relationship is key in making your life whole. Yet, for most, that perfect relationship is elusive. In Relationships for Life, marriage and family counselor and acclaimed speaker, Dr. Rick Marks, offers proven principles and skills for caring and mature relationships. Dr. Rick shares personal experiences from growing up in a broken home and how vulnerability led to healing in his own life. The book is a unique perspective packed with faith-based and clinical insights for making a relationship work. Relationships for Life is for anyone who wants to create and maintain healthy relations in every aspect of life. Available as a digital download in hardback and paperback on Amazon and in the web store at drrickmarks.com.
Welcome back to Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks. I'm Angelia Savage, your co-host, and we've got a really good show going on right mm-hmm. now that we're talking about abusive relationships and not only physical abuse, but we're also talking about emotional abuse, which is sometimes a little bit more covert, shall we say.
And in particular, we're seeing a lot of talked about the gaslighting that's taking place today.
Yep, and that's exactly right. That's a lot of it is going on. So let's go into now, let's talk about some of the traits of, we talked about gaslighting,
right.
But let's go into some more of the traits of abusive relationships.
Right. So one of the things is they're going to lie to you. I mean, a lot of gaslighters, abusers, they just lie. Just it, you know? You go, why do they lie? Because they're liars, you know? They're just liars. Just accept that as it is, you know? Jim Rohn, who is a great teacher in personal development, he said something a long time ago. He goes, I sleep great. And I don't try and figure out why people are the way they are. People go, why do they lie? Because they're liars. Liars lie. That's what they do. I don't really care why. It's just who they are. Accept it, right? They lie. Number two, they will actually discredit you. They'll do this by gossiping about you, spreading rumors about you, telling lies about you, getting people to be around, not to be around you, to question you. So they'll discredit you. Behind your back, and maybe even in front of you. You know, I say, so, you know, something as simple as, well, you know, Angelia, let's say we're at dinner with some friends, and I go, you know, I told you about that last week, but you didn't listen to me. Right there in front of people. I'm going to discredit you in front of people so that I look good and you look bad, right?
That devalues you as a human being.
And
you
so,
wouldn't do that to a friend. You wouldn't do that to anyone else. So why would you do that to your partner?
Exactly. And this is what gaslighters do.
Do they do it to friends?
Sure they do, because who they are.
So abusive relationships, they treat everyone the same, not just a spouse or partner.
Even their employees.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
It's the whole field of what was started back in the 90s called emotional intelligence. Emotionally healthy people don't abuse people. Immature people will abuse. You know, immature people will act immaturely, so abusers is a different piece, but let's be honest, all emotional abusers. Not all immature people are abusive, but all abusive people are immature. Think of it that way. All right?
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the things they deflect blame. So if I start to point something out to you, well, they're going to deflect the blame. Well, I did that because you. No, I only said that because you said this. So I'm not taking any responsibility, right? And then the next trait is they're going to minimize your thoughts and feelings. Well, you said that. However, your thoughts and feelings don't matter. So I minimize them and maximize mine, right? Thus, I shift the blame. I deny wrongdoing. And this is the hard part. Sometimes they'll use compassionate words as weapons, right?
How do they do that? Compassion a weapon.
It may sound like this, you know, yes. Well, you know, Angelia, I love you. I really care about you, and I care about our marriage. However, you really do have a problem still.
Oh. Well, there was a little backhanded
exactly. And so I'm using compassionate words, but I'm using it's like it keeps a hook in you.
Uh-huh.
Because, he does love me. See, he just said it. But at the same time, I'm stabbing you at the same time.
Ooh.
You see?
Feels yucky.
It's abusive. It's manipulative.
It just feels yucky.
Yeah. And it's exactly what they do. And so these are the things, if you see these kinds of things happening, you know, these are the things you want to be aware of. And so those are some thoughts there. You know, we can then talk about.
Okay. All encompassing. That sounds like someone who just in their mind is superior to you, to workers, to kids, to everyone. Is that really where all of this stems from?
Yeah.
Just a greater sense of self. I'm better than everyone. So I'm going to treat everyone horribly.
Yes.
That's just of someone who is abusive.
Yes.
They're just superior to anyone and everyone.
I look at them as very immature people, probably an emotional infant who are really tyrants. They're going to get what they want their way without any regard for anybody else's thoughts or feelings or relationship. And all relationships, in other words, you exist for me, Angelia. You see, and if you don't do what I want the way I want, then I'm going to tear you down, beat you down until you become the person that I want you to be. Oh, and by the way, what you don't know is you'll never be good enough.
Oh, I was going to say, and when does that hit rot? When is that at the bottom?
It never will be.
It's never at the bottom.
And this is why people in abusive relationships are destroyed psychologically, emotionally over time, end up in clinically depressed, anxiety disorders, some kill themselves. Why? Because what they don't know is they're being controlled and manipulated, but they're allowing themselves to be controlled and manipulated. They always have the power. They can always take their power back, but you're going to have to get out of that relationship.
So if that person stays in that relationship, that emotionally abusive relationship, and that abuser did break them down to, let's say, I mean, very low, mm-hmm. I won't say, as low as you can go,
right.
Do they then discard of you and move on to somebody else to break down?
They could. Or they may have three or four that they date, if you will. Or maybe he's abusive with you, but he has women on the side. He's committing adultery as well, manipulating other people. The thing is, I'm the center of the relationship and everything exists around me. In other words, he's Saturn, the planet. And all the other things, the ring, is everybody
revolve
else.
Around.
Mm-hmm.
Everything revolves around them.
Exactly.
And then is this a male-female dominated? Is it mostly men that do this? Or is it equally women are emotional abusers? Or
I would say you're going to see it mostly in men. But we do know because of the breakdown, I think more and more women are becoming abusive as well. Particularly to their children, you see. Because you can do this to your kids as well. Let's be honest, it's not just about loving relationships. It's just, you can do this to an employee. You know, I worked for a boss in Psychiatric Institute of Fort Worth, which no longer exists, back in the 80s. And my boss, though I learned much from him, he was a true narcissistic personality. And everything evolved around Ray. And others kept fighting him. And I realized, look, I just have to find a way to work for him in a way that allows me to have peace. And I learned, don't fight the man. Just do what he says. And I think my military background helped in that because I can, you know, salute and go, aye, sir, and just do what he tells me. No more, no less, just do it. and don't question it. And that allowed me, actually, because I did that and never fought him and the others did, he promoted me. I'm the junior guy. He promoted me over everybody else and allowed me to have the ability to run the whole hospital on weekends for him, paid me full-time salary and benefits to work two 12-hour shifts because he trusted me because I didn't fight him.
But that's, you're not condoning for someone to stay in a relationship and take that. You're not saying that, right?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is, like, from a work setting, you leave it or you better find a way to survive. I couldn't leave it because I needed the income because I'm in graduate school. Got to take care of my family, right? So I said, okay, then I'm going to find a way to survive. And my way of surviving was, I'll just do what he says. And something in my head actually said to me, I bet if I do what he says, he'll think I can do anything. And 8 months later, he promotes me over everybody else. And when one of them questioned Ray said to them, why would I let you control a hospital for 2 days when I'm not here, when you can't even follow simple orders? And I went, oh my goodness, I was right. He thought I could do anything because I never questioned him. I did what he said. And I played to his narcissism.
Yeah, you made him feel superiority.
But I did it because I needed the job. I needed to survive. Mm-hmm. I wanted to learn. I learned a lot from him. I mean, I'm a good clinician because I learned some things from that man. Mm-hmm. But you had to deal with his crazy side.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, when you're not in a relationship with somebody, living with somebody, sometimes you can put up with it at work.
We never really knew We never knew Ray was married. He always said he was married, but they lived apart.
Oh, I can't imagine why.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, well, so we went through some of the traits. Now let's go through some of the signs of abusive relationships.
Okay, so
that
if you,
you have been.
Yeah, so here's if you're in it. So one thing is you're going to doubt your feelings and reality, right? When you're trying to convince yourself that the treating scheme is not that bad, you're probably in an abusive relationship, right? Another one is when you start to question your judgments and perceptions. Again, these folks make you start questioning your own judgments, your own values, your own perception of the world. It's another one. And that leads to a sense of I'm feeling vulnerable and insecure. In other words, I'm not whole without you then because I'm no longer – I don't trust myself. I don't know who I am. But you keep telling me who I am. And then, by the way, you tell me you love me once in a while. So now I feel vulnerable and insecure. So now I got to be around you so I can feel vulnerable, so I can feel powerful and secure. My security now is linked to what you think of me. But you keep tearing me down anyway. So what do? I never question whether you might be wrong. I just believe that I am because that's how you kind of program me to believe, right?
But they keep taking away from you. So that you think that they are doing it because they love you and trying to help you, but at the same time, you're becoming more needy and attached to the things that they do for you that you no longer have to do for yourself.
Particularly if they convince you to quit working
and
quit doing those things, they'll start to control you that way. I want to take care of you. You don't need to work. Quit your job. Let's move to this city, and they're isolating you from your family. They move you away from other people. And you're like, what? They don't want you to influence. They don't want that other influence. Mm-hmm. They start to isolate you. Mm-hmm. You're right? This is what abusers do because they want control of you.
Yeah, they don't want anybody else to have any input.
Mm-mm.
Okay, well, so then you feel vulnerable. You feel insecure.
Alone and powerless. It comes from that then. And then next thing you know, you're the one who feels like you're the stupid one. You feel like you're the crazy one. And you've lost the ability to do some kind of reality testing. You think, that, wait a minute. I know I said this, but he said I said that. I know this happened, but he said it was this way. And you start to feel crazy. You know, it's all about power and control.
Yeah, and crazy's not a healthy relationship.
No. Healthy relationships help you become the best you that you can be. I like to say this way. Is Luella a better person having been married to me? Are my kids better people having me as a father? Are you a better person having me in your life? In other words, the influence I have in people, do I help them become a better person or do I help them become a worse person? It's real simple. And I may not need to look at them. I may need to look in the mirror. What am I doing? And so I think the real key is having been in a relationship with me, do you become a better person or become a worse person? And that's what I want to be able to do, is that in relationships, I help people become a better person. Why? Because for me to do that, I've got to treat you with goodwill, respect, humility, and empathy. Why? Why would I? There's no goodwill, and it's disrespectful to tear someone down. Only build them up.
Ah, well said. I'm going to end the program on that note,
okay,
because I mean, that's exactly what we need in our lives, to feel better. And if you don't feel better in the relationship, no matter where it is, no matter who it's with, then it's not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. Well, if you would like to learn to lead a life through the four protectors in all of your relationships and learn how to develop the tools that create us in your marriage, us in your family, or even us in the workplace, then register for the online Relate Well Core Program. You can register for Relate Well as a single or couples. Just register online today at relatewell.us. Again, that's relatewell.us. And if you're looking for private relationship counseling or life coaching from Dr. Rick, then call 904-724-8683. Again, that's 904-724-8683. Well, this has been another informative show from Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks, and we hope that we've helped you live your best life. And remember, until next week, relate well to live well.
We want to invite you to visit relatewell.us. Whether you're single or a couple, come learn what a healthy relationship looks like and then put it into practice. For relationship counseling, contact Dr. Rick at relatewell.us.